EU energy ministers meet again and fail again to strike a deal to cap the price of natural gas. Prices have soared since Russia invaded Ukraine, and the bloc wants to hurt Moscow. But can the deep divisions within the EU be overcome? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Adrian Finnegan. European Union energy ministers held their fifth emergency meeting on Tuesday to try to set a price cap for natural gas, but once again, they failed. Member states first promised a ceiling on prices in October, but are divided on what it should be. They want to punish Russia by paying less for its gas, while also protecting consumers from prices that have soared since the Ukraine war began. The split is between those wanting tough measures and those fearing that too low a cap might affect supplies. That could happen if producers sell to other markets instead of the EU, with higher rates on offer elsewhere. Energy ministers want to avoid a sharp increase in the gas price like in August. They're going to try to reach a compromise at another round of talks next week.
Will be only one open issue for the discussion on Monday. And this is the price level triggering the mechanism. We have to make sure that the situation from this August will not be repeated. I think we are almost there, but now we need to get together and show that unity is not an empty word, but a core value of the EU, which we all subscribe to.
Some members are worried about the impact of sanctions and a price cap on their own people. Hungary, for example, says its national interests come first.
Here in Brussels, the debate continues to be dominated by sanctions rather than peace building. And that is a big problem, a very big problem. Even though sanctions have clearly been shown to have failed. Sanctions are a failed policy, and sanctions have thus far led European decision-making and European reactions to the war into a dead end. I would like to reiterate that we consider the sanctions policy as a whole to be a misguided policy. When discussing sanctions, the most important aspect for us is that Hungarian national interests are not harmed and that Hungary's energy supply isn't jeopardized.
Well, so far, there's been agreement on some points. Czech Industry and Trade Minister Josef Sekela says that they've agreed to keep what's known as over-the-counter contracts out of the cap. Those are contracts directly negotiated between countries and suppliers outside official gas exchanges. The exemption would allow for more sources of supply. They've also agreed to review the measure at the end of February to see how effective it's been. And the deal will include ways to swiftly remove the cap in case it has negative knock-on effects. So let's bring in our guests for today's discussion. From Bern, we're joined by Cornelia Meyer, the CEO of Meyer Resources, an energy policy advisory. From Moscow, Chris Wiefer, the CEO at Macro Advisory, a strategic consultancy focused on Eurasia. And from Warsaw, Wojciech Szybylski, the editor-in-chief of the political magazine Visegrad. Welcome to you all. Cornelia, let's start with you. What exactly is a price cap on gas designed to do? Hurt Russia or protect EU consumers, or both? And will it work?
I think it's designed to do both, but I'm not sure it's effective on either. It's designed to make sure that prices don't go too high. As we have seen, you know, in summer, prices went so high that people really feared for how they could supply. They could supply their population adequately, and it's also supposed to put a cap on the Russian on what Russia can earn. But you have to understand that when you look at gas, before the Ukraine war, about 40% of all gas coming to Europe came from Russia. In Germany, it was 55%. Since then, it's really gone down to about 17%, and people are putting on offshore liquid, offshore regasification terminals, all sorts of things to make sure they can get more LNG, admittedly more expensive. But Europe is not only slowly and steadily, very quickly weaning itself off its total dependency on Russian gas.
All right. So, Cornelia, if, as you say, the dependence upon Russian gas has fallen, why are certain EU member states... why do they feel it's so important to introduce this price cap then? Why are they trying to push it through?
Well, they're pushing it through because some countries really very much still depend on Russian gas. If you look at an Austria, if you look at, you know, Slovakia and those bordering states, they still really need, and some states in the Western Balkans, they still need Russian gas. So they want to avoid that too much money goes to Russia and into the war efforts. But it's a matter, you know, this is a matter over the next 12, 18 months. Looking forward, it's really a matter of where will the gas for Europe come from, but it will be a lot more expensive. LNG is more expensive than Russian pipeline gas, which comes from the Western Siberian gas fields on an infrastructure that's basically paid off. So you're having new infrastructure, more expensive gas. So it's so prices are going to go up in Europe no matter what.
Chris Weaver in Moscow, how would Russia react then if a cap on the price of Russian gas was implemented? I mean, will it hurt Russia at all? Can it get around the cap?
Well, first of all, I have to say that there is much less commentary and certainly much less debate about the proposed gas price cap than there is or has been about the oil price cap. Certainly, we've seen a very fierce political reaction to the proposed oil price cap. Even we're now expecting that President Putin will sign legislation making it illegal for any Russian producer to sell oil under the terms of the oil price cap. There has not been or hardly any commentary about the gas price cap. But one of the reasons is, of course, the price level that's been indicated at 275 euros at TTF, the benchmark price, the price of gas has only ever been above that rate for only a few days in August. The current price is almost half that level. It's about 130. So that's one reason why there's kind of much less excitement about this in Russia, because the levels are being set so high. And also, I think the other reason is because, of course, Russia does have options when it comes to transferring oil. And we see obviously a great effort now to secure tankers and other routes to shift oil to Asia. You can't do that with gas, of course, because it's pipeline routed. So I think for now, the position in Moscow is they're simply waiting to see what is agreed, what will be the impact, and then only then will we get a reaction from Moscow. But it's right. If itself, it's not going to have much damage.
Chris, let me just clarify.
Because, of course, volumes are already down anyway.
Yeah, let me clarify what you were saying there. The current price of gas is well below where this cap is thought it's going to be implemented. So I mean, it's not going to make much difference.
No, it's not. The current price is 130 euros and the price cap proposal is 275. So it's a long, long way off it. I'm assuming that the reason why Europe wants to agree this is because they're looking forward to next year. Really, probably Europe is not going to have much of an energy problem this winter. There's already enough gas has been secured. As the previous speaker said, there's been very big imports of LNG. And so reserves are high. And this shouldn't be a problem this winter. But it's already looking like a much more dangerous situation for Europe coming into next winter. May not be able to get the same LNG supplies next summer as it got this summer, because China did not buy as much LNG as it contracted and therefore allowed that LNG to go to Europe. If the Chinese economy recovers, as it now appears to be, then China will take that LNG and Europe won't get it. So the position, therefore, is we could be looking at a much higher a gas price and greater volatility in the gas market this time next year. And I think the mechanism, therefore, is aimed at that rather than anything more immediate.
Wojciech, what's Poland's position on this? It's one of the countries that's pushing hard for this cap, isn't it?
Yes, Poland is one of the countries that pushes hard for the cap, but is also one of the countries that has been for a long time pushing for European energy independence or interdependence by proposing and pushing for the energy packages that would build up a European energy market as a whole and not disconnect and divided market of nation states that has been abused by the other players like Russia for their own benefit and weakening the bloc. Currently, the gas price cap is being pushed down as much as possible by countries like Poland, and I believe Lithuania as well. Should there be a big disagreement of that on that price? I don't think so. Of course, there is something behind the door and closed doors that we don't know yet what it's coming to be. But it's part, importantly, we have to remember it is part of a broader effort called Repower EU. It's a commissioned effort to make Europe as a bloc more independent from weaponizing gas prices, gas deliveries, energy deliveries to Europe by specifically Russia, but any other actors in the future. And it's a long-term strategy. So just like my previous speaker said, it's about building up a resilience for the next year and the future year in terms of acting together as a bloc and not disunited as nation-states markets.
But does Poland have any sympathy for landlocked countries like Hungary and Austria, who, of course, you know, don't have ports to take LNG and don't want a cap on Russian gas?
That's the whole point of building interconnectivity. Poland has been at the forefront of proposing interconnectors and building, in fact, since 2008, the gas crisis when Russia was turning off their delivery of gas to Europe, specifically Central Europe has been hit. Poland, along with other countries of Central Eastern Europe and Germany and many other countries, have been starting to build with European support so-called interconnectors to make the gas market truly European and not landlocked to nation states. So Austria and Czechia and Slovakia and Hungary, they're being offered and they're having these interconnectors built to make the energy market and the gas market specifically fully accessible to all Europeans and to be more resilient against such kind of blockades by rogue actors.
Cornelia, let's continue with this idea of the interconnected world, the EU energy independence, co-interdependence. Is that wishful thinking, do you think?
There will never be independence, but interconnected. Europe started to build interconnectors actually way before 2008. They started when US money rehabilitated the Gazprom pipelines. There were interconnectors built from Zeebrugge in Holland, you know, with the North Sea and British gas. So this has been a trend, and it's really important because we get gas from Algeria, you know, we get gas from the Mediterranean. Then we get all the LNG in Spain, in the Mediterranean, in Holland, in England, in Germany. So yes, this interconnectivity is really important. So gas becomes more fungible. The problem with gas is oil is you find oil and oil will find the market. As our previous speaker, Mr. Weaver said, you know, there's been now a big shadow fleet bought, especially by the Russians, to ship oil to places who do not adhere to the oil price cap. That's not possible with gas unless it's LNG, with pipeline gas. So these interconnectors are really the key to make gas fungible. And yes, Europe has been working on this actually since about 1998 from various places, and it needs to speed that up.
Chris, there in Moscow, what impact are sanctions against Russia having on ordinary people? I mean, you talked about the fact that people are far more worked up about a price cap on oil than they are on gas. Is any of this having any impact on daily life there in Russia?
Well, these issues are not. Obviously, the debate about oil price dealing with sanctions is very much at a kind of government level or at an economist level. But ordinary people, you know, going about their daily lives, people are, of course, are aware and are affected by, say, the travel bans, the fact that Russians can no longer cross the border into the Baltic countries or Poland, etc. Price increases we've seen this year because of trade disruptions. And there is a general concern about what will be the economic impact next year. People are generally more aware that Russia is now entering a phase, you know, where the accumulation of sanctions is going to start having a bigger impact on economy, on jobs, and therefore their lives. So there's general concern, therefore, about the accumulation and the impact of sanctions. People are not talking about oil price cap or gas price cap or any of those specific issues. That's clearly at the government level. And as I say, all of the government discussion has been about the oil price, not the gas cap. Yeah. And, you know, and again, you have to look at the two things. One, of course, is there's been a big disruption on gas volumes. Obviously, Nord Stream 1 was suspended and then it's now been taken out of action. So volumes of gas going into Europe through the Druzhba pipeline and through the Turkish 2 pipeline are much less than usual. That's a much bigger factor in terms of economic impact, the fact that Russian volumes have been substantially reduced. And, you know, and the prices, I say, this year we've seen a big jump in price, but Russia's been used to a very low price, much less than 100 for every year up to this year. So I really don't think, therefore, even if there is a gas price cap put in place at anything above 100 TTF, I don't think the Russians are going to react to it in anything like the same way as they've reacted to the oil price cap. I think they'll live with it.
All right, let's talk about the EU's apparent inability to come to any sort of deal, to find unity on this. Wojciech, at the beginning of the programme, we pointed out that the Czech energy minister said that his fellow ministers could face a reputation risk if they don't agree on this cap to stop future price spikes. Now, if 90% of the deal is done, what's the problem and what is preventing it getting over the line time and time again?
Well, we can only assume, as we have no credible account of, you know, any report that would testify what is happening in behind the closed door. But there are always countries in EU that use cards to negotiate their individual interests on potentially even disconnected from this particular energy policy. And countries like that, for instance, Hungary, have been oftentimes using the need to agree on certain common foreign policy agenda as a token in negotiating something completely different along with the other countries regarding rule of law or regarding some other types of funding that they are seeking. So I would not be surprised that, again, a country like this or the one that I mentioned or another may be finding it hard to agree at first because it's seeking a side deal. There is a parallel negotiation going on with respect to the individual interests of that given country. But that's purely speculative. That's, however, the logic. Usually decisions are being reached, that these deals are being done. And we've seen that in the support of Hungary for the 18 billion support, 8 million euro support package for Ukraine only this week, which has been opposed by Hungary previously. And Hungary agreed to that in direct exchange, for making us a few steps back by the European Commission in terms of cutting funds for rule of law conditionality.
Cornelia, is any of this going to make any difference at all for consumers, people like you and I, when we pay our gas or electricity bills? This is all academic at the moment, but could a price cap on gas ultimately drive prices higher? You said that you think it would fail. Will we still be paying more for our gas and electricity regardless?
We will be paying more for our gas and for our electricity, because even if we have a gas price cap, and even if the gas prices, as Mr. Weaver pointed out, you know, very rarely was the gas price above the price of the price cap. But when you look at redirecting trade flows is always a very expensive undertaking, whether that's now oil or whether that's gas, and especially with gas. And LNG is a lot dearer, a lot more expensive. So as we are weaning ourselves off Russian gas and use more LNG and more gas from other sources, which will be more expensive, yeah, obviously we will have to deal with that. And it then depends on how our utilities buy the gas, when they buy it, how they buy it. And when we look at it now, Europe was extremely lucky that China had the zero COVID policy and the economy didn't really boom. So a lot of cargoes, as Mr. Weaver said, were redirected to Europe where they could get better prices. But once China picks up, and then there's this East Asian, place, which is China, Korea, Japan, which are the largest consumers of LNG. Once that consumption picks up, you know, Europe will need to pay a lot to entice cargoes to come here. And what we have in store, though, is U.S. LNG, but that is still in the permitting process, and we're still about 3 to 5 years off from that hitting the market. So, you know, gas and oil are not light switches. This infrastructure takes time to create, and it takes time to redirect the trade flows. So yes, in short, it will get more expensive for the European consumer.
Chris, do you agree with what Cordelia was saying? Not about the European consumer, but about where Russia will sell its gas if it can't sell it to Europe.
Yes, and I think, look, there's a difference, obviously, what discussion on the gas cap from oil, because the oil cap is very specific to Russia, but the gas cap proposal will affect all gas purchased by Europe. And I think it is right to focus on LNG. The headlines, we will certainly focus on piped gas, because that's coming from Russia, therefore it's targeting Russia. So you get the political headlines. But the much more serious issue is, what will be the price cap on LNG? Will there be a price cap on LNG? Because that is a more portable, movable product. If Europe caps the price and demand from Asia and elsewhere spikes, those tankers will simply turn around and go elsewhere. So I think Europe will have to be extremely careful on what will be the price cap mechanism and the review mechanism for LNG rather than for pipe gas, because we know the future, as we've heard, is to try and acquire more and more LNG, because it can be sourced from different places, reduce pipe gas, particularly from Russia. So the question of price cap on LNG, I think, is much more critical than the price cap on the oil or the gas coming in from Russia. Because yeah, if we get a strong recovery in the Asian markets, they will pay a lot more for the gas, and Europe could end up with gas shortages in addition to higher prices, if they get this pricing mechanism wrong.
Wojciech, is there much appetite in the EU to cap the price of LNG?
Well, I don't know about the particular issue here, whether there's much appetite in Europe, but there is much appetite in Europe for a broad energy package reform. Okay. In the Repower EU program, that includes the gas caps. It's also about introducing essentially the framework of a common European market and innovation in terms of getting more greener alternative energies, more effective and energy sources, and lowering the consumption level. So we need to look at it from a holistic perspective of what the EU, meaning the Commission and the EU countries, want to achieve here. And there is a general agreement into the direction it is going. There is, of course, there are some concerns that my co-speakers have already mentioned, and they are supported by European Central Bank, that also is worried about not making the right call on the price cap in terms of the level of the price cap that may create shortages. And this concern is being, on the other hand, weighted by the immediate effect of introducing a price cap, which is expected by countries like Central European ones, like Poland, to have a direct and immediate effect on the incomes levels of Russia, through which Russia funds the war effort in Ukraine.
There, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it. We are out of time. Thank you to you all, Cornelia Meyer, Chris Weaver, and Wojciech Szybylski. As always, thank you for watching. Don't forget, you can see the programme again at any time by going to the website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, you can join us at our Facebook page at facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And as always, you can join the conversation on Twitter, our handle at AJInsideStory. From me, Adrian Finnegan, and the whole team here in Doha. We'll see you again. Bye for now.